Buddies, it's the Massive Report brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton, and of course available in a craft beverage retailer of any repute near you. Head to landgrantbrewing.com for more info. And of course, the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street, a 21 and up barcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. OldNorthArcade.com. Hit it up. Episode 247 of this distinguished podcast. We're recording for a bit of perspective here on Monday, October the 2nd. And obviously, the biggest news of the day is the shootings last night and early this morning in Las Vegas, Nevada. More than 50 people already confirmed dead at a concert there. Obviously, our thoughts are with all those affected. We've seen the three greatest mass shootings in U.S. history within the last 10 years, and we got to find a way to be better to each other and do better by each other. And we're also not quite as serious, or maybe not quite as large in scope, but nonetheless disheartening news. We are perhaps losing Tom Petty, one of the greats, and today. So it's been a tough day, and we hope to bring a little levity here to talk about Columbus Crew, which there is some great stuff to talk about on that front. And we'll be talking about it this week with Patrick Murphy from the Massive Report. Pat, how you doing?
I'm good, Bart. How are you?
It's a tough one, but fortunately, Columbus Crew, again, great game on Saturday. That I'm looking forward to getting my mind off all that with some good crew talk. Joining us is also going to be Ralph Schudell. Ralph, how are we doing, sir?
With my birthday creeping in ever so closer, I'm starting to get the emails for discounts, so I'm excited about that.
Nice. What's the best discount so far?
10% off at Best Buy. Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Wait.
So you've got 10% off of Victoria's Secret?
Yes.
Well done. Good for you, buddy.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
And also, sorry, a little bit of a delayed introduction as well. Alec Stanek's with us. Alec, how are you doing, man?
I'm okay. I went to the Crew game, saw them win, and carried that victorious spirit up to Cleveland, Ohio the next day to watch my beloved Cleveland Browns lose 31-7 to the Cincinnati Bengals. I've had a weekend. It's been, you know, in Mondays.
That was about as Browns of a game and a performance as you could possibly ask for. That was ridiculous. But fortunately, earlier, as you alluded to, Columbus Crew did the damn thing. And Patrick Murphy, why don't you take us back and recap, along with the rest of the gang, all that action Saturday night in the home finale at Maffrey Stadium, at least for the regular season.
I'm going to start this off by making sure everyone is aware that Steve Clark did indeed start. And if you listened last week, you know that means that I owe Ralph Schudell some form of Chipotle.
Delicious.
Now,
Chipotle.
I've heard somewhere that he thinks he gets to add guac.
And
I'm
going to
put my foot down right now.
And queso.
You get no such thing, and you will like it. Anyway, I will get Ralph Chipotle, though, here in the next week or so, whenever we can find time to go do that together.
Picture didn't happen.
Yes. All right, I will tweet it out. We'll tweet out pictures like Ola Kamara and whoever it was.
Federico Higuain.
Yeah,
that's what I thought, but I didn't.
Pedro
anyway,
goes with them, too, as you were.
Yeah, so speaking of the game, Columbus, as Bart mentioned, a good result. 2-0, DC United is a team that not going to make the postseason, have had a very bad year, their last year at RFK. Maybe that's why it's gone so poorly, is because they're getting out of that dump. But they came to Columbus for this one on the back of 3 games in 8 days. Columbus was the fresher of the two sides and got it underway early. An early chance by Federico Higuain went over the crossbar. But then just a few minutes later, he plays a corner kick in. Josh Williams, and tell me if you've heard this one before. It sounds like last week, heads it home. This time it was an early 1-0 lead, but that would be enough for a winner. And I thought that the middle portions of the match were a little bit back and forth. DC created a couple chances in this game that could have pulled things level right before halftime, even early in the second half. So, this wasn't the final score shows that Columbus dominated this one 2-0. But wasn't as complete of a performance as maybe you would think just looking at the stats. But in the end, 2-0 is what it is. Justin Merrim, a very, very nice goal, up for goal of the week. Justin made the MLS team of the week. He also got called up to Iraq today. So a big week for him. Our Colin Johnson just posted his goal anatomy on that goal, and it's a good piece of kind of how that all built up to Justin's fantastic shot. I recommend giving that a read. So, Columbus handled their business, which I think is the most important part. It's your last home game. You have a chance to qualify for the playoffs with a win. You go out there, you get the job done. Zach Steffen had to come up with a few saves, but nothing too crazy. They put away two chances in front of goal, which is about what you ask for in soccer. And 3 points is 3 points, and not one step, you're in the playoffs, one step closer to potentially moving up and with 2 games left to play.
And you mentioned Zach Steffen picking up his 8th shutout of the season. Anybody of the stats buffs, Ralph, you're our resident. What's that put him in Crew SC history?
Oh God, I haven't actually looked at one. I think he's tops now. Maybe?
I would guess we're gonna go out on a limb and say that Zach Steffen is probably set a Crew SC goalkeeper record for wins or shutouts for a under 23 player.
You
feel good about that?
Yeah, I mean, he got some props from John Bush on Twitter today, former Crew SC goalkeeper, current Indy 11 player coach, John Bush, for setting a mark. And, I mean, the kid's obviously, he's on fire, but he's a physical freak. And I don't know, guys, if you feel the same way, but it's really fun to watch this kid seemingly get better and better every week. He continues to defy logical gravity, I guess, gravity, physics, whatever, because the kid has an incredible wingspan and shots. I could think of the one shot, I think it was either Areola or Acosta had in the second half that looked like it was surely trickling into the bottom corner, and he just gets that one fingertip to it and tips it out for a corner. And I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah, I think we've talked about Zach a lot this year, coming in for Steve Clark, who obviously was in the opposite net. A young keeper, you're never quite sure, even though, talented, never quite sure what you're going to get exactly. But he's been good this year, leading this team to the postseason. I'm looking up here to see where he stands in shutouts, but my computer's going slow. But obviously a great another good performance by him, and Columbus sets a record for home wins in a year, which is, impressive thinking of how long they've played in this league now. So, all in all, I think, a solid year. It's not done yet, but, at least the home portion of it has been handled really well. This is a team that has been tough to beat at home, and now they're going to look to try and get at least one home playoff game.
And when you look at this team earlier this season, heading, prior to the All-Star break, Alex, and you look at it, how many people would have taken you up if you'd said, and we probably did if we go back and listen to the tape, said that this team was going to be a playoff team clinched with 2 games remaining?
Yeah, I think that this team in general, and Berhalter teams in general, seem to start slow and pick up speed as they go through the season. And I think a lot of that has to do with the complexity of Greg's system. It's a very kind of pass-dependent system, and also a system that really depends on every player knowing exactly where every other player is without even having to look. So before you even lift your head up after you receive the ball, kind of, you know exactly, okay, Will is going to be 5 feet to my left, and so I can just play that ball without even having to turn my head. The system really kind of demands that kind of awareness. That's not just when you're talking about the midfield and the offense. When you're talking about the defense, those guys really need time to gel. And unfortunately, you know, we had a lot of turnover. We brought in Jonathan Mensah. It took him a while to kind of get his feet under him. Then Nico Ness kind of fell out of form a little bit. And then we brought Josh Williams into the picture, and it took him a while to kind of get up to speed. Now that we have everybody kind of working in a cohesive system, I think that this team is really, really solid. Could go quite deep into the playoffs. I'm not sure this is an MLS Cup winning side, but you know, you get hot at the right time, you never know. So I'm optimistic, but good performance this weekend. I thought Jonathan Mensah had another great game. Ben Olsen was really sad throughout most of the 90 minutes, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I was watching him almost as much as I was watching the game, and he did lots of kind of arm motions and seemed very frustrated. So a good time was had by all except Ben Olsen, which is just how you want it.
And, you know, it's funny you talk about it, Alex, is getting hot at the right time. This team reminds me a lot of the 2015 squad that obviously got hot at the right time. They had a stretch of where they had 5 unbeaten, but in their last 9 matches, they got a result in 6 of their last 9 to advance up to second place in the Eastern Conference and secure a really nice playoff seeding. I'm not saying that this team's exactly where 2015 is, but it's very reminiscent to that. And I kind of agree with you in terms of, is this an MLS Cup winning side? I mean, to be determined, but it's encouraging to see this team turn it around this late in the season and flip the switch on.
A couple things. First, shutout-wise, Zach Steffen's 8 in a season is tied for 4th. All time, but I don't think that any of these guys that's tied with Steve Clark in 2014, mm-hmm. Andy Grunebaum 2012, Will Hesmer 2011, and Steve Clark in 2016. I think he's younger than all those guys.
Yeah, and certainly unless, none of them were rookies.
Yeah.
Unless Will Hesmer, was he? It was that his rookie season or anything?
No, Hesmer actually in his first year with the team, which I believe was 2008, he had. Mm-hmm. I believe that's his first year starting with the team because he came over, I think, the year before. But 2008, 10 shutouts, which was the MLS Cup winning year. Mm-hmm. He had 11 in 2010, which is the record. As for comparisons to 2015, I think you can certainly make a decent amount of them in terms of the way the season's gone. There were a few bad losses kind of mixed in there where people, you know, got rather frustrated and rightfully so. You know, you talk about the loss down in Orlando in 2015 that stands out this year, obviously the bad one in Toronto. So there's certainly that. And then, you know, kind of getting your act together at the right time. Greg Berhalter's team, since he took over here, have done that. Even last year when the team didn't make the playoffs, the form over the last, you know, 10 games or so was relatively good in comparison to the rest of the season. The thing that I think will stand out with this team is how they played at home. You know, it's been impressive to watch this team be so dominant, you know, set a record for number of home wins. They've made Mapfre Stadium, and, you know, that's a credit to the fans that come out, a fortress, you know, 12-3-2 this season. Obviously, you'd like to be better than 3-9-3 on the road, but, you know, in MLS, you've got to win your home games, and Columbus has done that for the most part.
And Alex, I know you are also working hard to try to find some of those good stats, figure out the truth about the Columbus Crew shutout streak. Didn't quite get to that, but got some other good stuff.
Oh, so this is totally stupid and will probably make a few people laugh and everybody else groan. But the fouls committed record is held by Tony Chani from 2015, and he is holding that record with a double-digit lead over the number 2 person, also from 2015, which was Kai Kamara. with
wow.
73
Kai committed
in 59 fouls committed
as a striker. And yeah, also rounding up the top five, also Tony Chani, but from 2014.
Yeah, and then 2011 or 2001 and 2002, Brian Mazenov.
Oh, but you just got
that Kai statistic actually really makes sense to me because of maybe even set piece defending or trying to win the ball back from defenders. I could see that because I always remember him being particularly aggressive when he lost the ball.
It certainly was, and Kai, yeah, it's who still 59.
Maybe he was twerking too much.
No.
Yeah.
But look at these Chani stats. So he committed 129 fouls in two seasons.
That's your midfield boss right there, guys.
Yep.
That's crazy.
God.
Chani, man, I miss Chani.
I think we all miss Tony Chani as well, but certainly have been happy with some of the performances up from Kakuta Mane this season,
yes.
The replacement. But you were touching on, you know, a little bit earlier, Alex, this system, and really nobody exemplifies executing this system quite like Frederico Higuain. Of course, we've talked about him at length all season, but again, this is ending out in what's going to likely be his most his best statistical season from a statistical output, close to picked up an assist, as you mentioned, on the Josh Williams goal. But also, you know, there's the possibility that this might have been his last home game in front of Columbus Crew SC fans, depending on how things play out in the playoffs. Just little, you know, thoughts on that, and I don't know if either of our intrepid reporters have any updates on the future status of Frederico Higuain. Could this have been goodbye?
Well, I can tell you that he is not leaving Columbus because I am not going to let him leave Columbus. I'm going to find out when his plane leaves and let all the air out of all of the tires of his car an hour before he's scheduled to depart, and I will. Do like I'll act like one of those like 3-year-old kids that you see at the supermarket sometimes where they just like grab their parent's leg and start crying, refuse to let go. We can't let Pipa go. I have come to the conclusion that it is not acceptable to let him go. I just
pay
the man the money. I don't care if he wants his family to move here, find them cushy front office jobs or something. I don't care.
They're already here.
Then we have to. There's got to be something. Can we get orders of mate delivered to his house every day or something. Like, I don't know. We have to find some sort of solution.
Now that
there
would
must
be interesting.
Some way to bribe him to stay in Columbus forever. Because he is a absolute treasure who should never be allowed to leave. The TIFO that we did this weekend, or not we, TIFO Sweat did it. I did not help out on that. The TIFO that they did.
That's definitely going to get you some flack on Thursday night. That certain other podcast.
Yeah, for sure. No, I was very complimentary of their work, and I thought it was fantastic. But he deserves one of those every game for the rest of the season, as far as I'm concerned. He is just a absolute Crew legend, and I hope that he will spend the rest of his career here in Columbus. I do not want to see him go. I think he's very difficult to replace in terms of not just his on-the-field ability. That part is probably easy to replace. But his off-the-field just kind of leadership and the way he carries himself, the way he's a role model for all of these younger players on our roster, it's going to be very difficult to find a guy like that to fill his boots. And so pay the man his money, whatever you got to do. Find a solution. If you got to get, you know, barbecues set up for him. I know he loves barbecues. he's a big fan of Easton, apparently. You know, if you gotta get him
Build-A-Bear
VIP pass to Easton Town Center, make it happen, Anthony. Come on, man. You got connections in Columbus. Like, let's find a solution for Pipa here. Let's keep him around for 2-3 more seasons. He still has stuff to give, dang it. He still has stuff to give. Re-sign Pipa. Re-sign him. Come on.
So I'm going to take an unpopular opinion here. And
don't say it. Don't you dare say it.
But, you know, I understand. Let me start off first off with I understand the contributions that Frederico Higuain has made to this program. we would not be in the place that we are with a player like Federico, without a player like Federico Higuain. That being said, though, as Patrick dies,
it was supposed to be a great spit take gag. You were supposed to get it, wait till later for like the butt, and that's when Pat spits it out, but instead he just started way before it. Sorry, folks.
I was gonna say it was some Game of Thrones stuff, and I was poisoning him kind of like at the Red Wedding. What? Anyway.
That's when it. The poisoning happened.
Or no, I was doing Arya Stark kind of things where they were...
Soccer.
So anyway, back to my point before I was so rudely interrupted. I'm just kidding. But, you know, obviously this squad wouldn't be without where they are without Federico Higuain. And I think Alex put it brilliantly last week that this guy really is the talisman. He really ties everything together. He makes this program click. That being said, I start thinking back to 2016 and how his health was less than optimal. And I have to think that there's not really a way he can continue playing at this level for another full season, being how physical that this league is, how much younger that this league is getting. You look down at Atlanta, you know, Miguel Amarone, who is not even anywhere close to what Federico Higuain's age is, he's out for 3 weeks for a knee injury because he ran into somebody very, you know, in a physical nature. You know, you've got players, this league's getting faster, this league's getting younger. MLS is no longer a retirement league anymore, and I'm not hinting that Higuain, you know, was of the retirement age necessarily. He still can contribute. He was very young when he first came into this league. I would like to see, and this is a pipe dream, I'm well aware of it, but if we got another Argentine that came in, by the name of Diego Valeri, somebody to that effect. You know, if we could get somebody that could make that much of an impact on the squad. But I think I'm with Higuain. If we can keep him around as a bench player, maybe a player coach, something to that effect, I'd love to keep him. But I remain skeptical at how much he can actually stay on the pitch and contribute.
We will sign Radamel Falcao before Valeri comes to Columbus, Ohio.
Hi, Patrick.
Do you know how old Diego Valeri is?
Off my head, he's probably 31, maybe 32.
He is 31. Do you know how old Federico Higuain is?
32. 33.
Yeah, so I don't
32,
think...
October 25th.
Okay.
I'm looking at his 32. Wiki page.
Yeah, I don't agree. I think, you know, last year, yes, he was hurt. This year, he's played 24 and started 24 games. You know, he could become the fourth player ever, assuming he scores in these last two games in Crew SC history, to get to 10 goals and 10 assists. You know, I don't see him slowing down. You know, he's never been a guy who's used speed or power as part of his game, and that's never affected him before. I think that while this league has other offensive weapons in it, for sure, and there's guys that are better than Federico Higuain and younger than Federico Higuain, you know, I still think he's a top playmaker at this level, and, you know, a guy that they know that they can count on. He knows the city. He knows that he likes it here. You know, if they go out and sign somebody, especially a young player, you never know the result. I mean, we've seen plenty of guys come over here and not make it. You know, not everyone is going to be Artur or, you know, someone of that level. So, you know, I think if they can renegotiate with him at a price that they're happy with, I do think that, you know, it makes a lot of sense. You know, if there's an opportunity to bring in a younger player to play behind him, which I know that they've looked into and explored significantly, you know, I think that is kind of the route to go, assuming you can make it work, you know, financially. And I think that is what will be the interesting point this offseason, is what it's going to take to make these two sides come to terms, because I do think Greg wants to keep him. I think, if given the right situation, Federico would want to stay here. You know, obviously he knows his level of play and how good he is and what he can accomplish. And I think he just wants to make sure that that's appreciated. So, you know, I think he's an important part to this team. I do think there is something being said to being ahead of a player's downslide, as opposed to, you know, being a year too late. And I think that that is a point that maybe you can make if you're worried about that. But as of right now, I don't see that decline. You know, he just had 3 assists 2 games ago, and seems to be playing as good as ever.
And the other thing is, even if you have decline from Frederico Higuain, or if there are injury problems, he is a designated player. But I would venture, if you were going to look at a DP list for most teams, how many of them are tens? It's probably that a high amount. Those are players that you pay for goals. And you pay, whether it's creating them or scoring them yourselves. And as a guy who's, yes, he's a DP, but he's not an over, huge salary relative to some of the other guys that contribute. Diego Valeri, I'm just looking at these, makes 2.6 million compared to 1.05 for Frederico. So twice the salary for a player like that. And obviously, as Pipa, might be on his way out, and certainly if you want to see, but relative, I don't think it's that bad. You're getting a bad deal for Pipa if you get at least, close to that, or maybe not even a huge increase or something for a little bit short term. And again, go the Pat Murphy route that you were mentioning there, trying to instead identify that long-term replacement. I just think that it's such a difficult position to replace a starting caliber quality attacking midfielder, number 10, and really make it financially feasible, especially for a small market like Columbus.
And you brought something up wonderfully that in that little segment, Bart, that I didn't think of until you said it. The thing is, both of you guys touched on great points, is that I like the prospect of trying to re-sign him for as much money as, makes sense for both parties. But the other thing that I just thought of is we're sitting on a ton of Don Garber fun bucks that we could apply towards his salary and try to buy down that cap space, and that could open up the possibility of getting a younger player in behind him and have him kind of tutor a youngster to take over for him maybe in another year if he's feeling that his body can, hold up for another year or something of that nature. But, that allocation money could come into play.
They don't have as much as they once did because obviously they brought in Pedro. Assuming Kukudamane leaves, some of that has to go to, or is it a draft pick that has to go to Vancouver?
I think the draft pick.
I believe okay. It's the draft pick.
But yep. They use some of that to get Mane here. So I don't know, specific numbers or anything like that, but, the stuff that was left over from Kai and whatnot. Now they did get some back over the summer. But they use some of it on international spots and things like that. So, they aren't loaded like they probably once were.
You have to think they've got the money to be able to get this done. You have to think both parties, if people wants it, Columbus has to find it, should be able to get this done.
I would hope so. I mean, when you go back and you think to the games that he has missed this season or when he was rested, things like that, we looked like crap. And when he was hurt last season, we really looked like crap. And I'm not sure that this system works without Pipa. I'm really not sure. I think if you rested him for the last game of the season or something like that, you would see a much, much, much worse performance than you've seen from this team in recent weeks. So do you really want to gamble on some random player that you find in another country or in this league and hope that they can adapt to Greg's system? In hope that they can be that midfield distributor that Pipa is? Or do you just pay the guy whatever it takes to make him a happy camper and stay around and make him feel appreciated in Columbus? I think you have to do that. I think you have to do everything in your power to keep him here, because I almost feel like our success hinges on Frederico Higuain. Maybe more than any other player on this roster. I think you can see guys like Ola Kamara go in and out of form. It doesn't kill the team. When Pipa's not there, there is a significant difference in the way the entire play looks from the back line to the strikers. It's a mess.
One of the players who has been, and maybe not quite to the level of Pipa certainly, but has been a real catalyst for this team all season long, Justin Miram, and was once again last weekend scoring the absolutely beautiful goal. Should be one of the top goals of the week, and I believe you can vote on MLSsoccer.com for Justin Meerum with that beauty of the what did we call that one, Ralph? Not the meat hook.
Called it the fish hook.
The fish hook. Yeah, it was just absolutely beautiful. And guys, just Justin Meerum, let's just brag about him.
He's wonderful. My perspective of that was, and I can remember my thoughts exactly into the sequence, was as I saw him dribbling down the side of the pitch, I sat there and I go, all right, here he goes. He's going to go do the, you know, the unbelievable dribble that he does, you know, because he's good for one or two a game. And he lets go of it, and I almost remember time kind of slowing down. And I sat there and I said, there's no way that's going in. There's no way. It's going to go wide, or it's just going to, you know, not even get in. And then
there's never any doubt. He touches that, he's just ridiculous.
Yeah, or I said, you know, Clark's going to get a hand to it. Clark's a athletic dude. He's going to get a hand to it. And it just – he used all – of the physical space of the goal to get that in there. And I mean, it was impressive. It was like, I couldn't believe it. I turned around and I looked to the guy that I go to the games with, normally my roommate, and I said, you know, just my mouth was wide open. Justin Meerum continues to amaze. This kid is just unbelievable. I there's no better way to put it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, his season has been great. You know, it's unfortunate that he doesn't get more of the publicity that that some of the other guys do around the league that play in those attacking roles. You know, I know he was getting a little bit early in the year and whatnot from some national pundits, but you know, maybe if Chris, he were on TV more, he would be more well respected around this league, because he's a very good player, and he's playing with a lot of confidence right now, which is great news for Columbus as they head into, you know, the final two games and then the postseason. You know, I've been a little critical of Justin at times this year, just in the sense that, you know, sometimes I think, you know, he doesn't look like he's giving a ton out there, but he's in almost every game that I've been critical of him, he's found a way to score a goal or at least have an impact late. So, you know, credit to him. You know, I think certainly deserved MLS Team of the Week honors. I haven't seen all the goals this week around MLS, but I do think he should win it in my eyes. That was a fantastic goal, and I, you know, obviously for this team, I hope he continues his form into the postseason.
And the thing about this, guys, is that it's all the more impressive is he's globetrotting while he's up to this terrific run of form. He's going to Iraq. He's doing these national call-ups. You know, if Cruessi has a road trip, he's going out west for that. And I mean, guys, the thing for athletes, and they always talk about this, soccer players in particular, being on a flight is not very easy on an athlete's body because joints swell. You know, things become inflamed. It's not very easy. And when this guy is playing at the level that he's playing, doing all the traveling, that's one thing that we cannot lose sight about, is that he's able to keep this form, not only mentally, but physically.
One caveat on that, though, as I was rewatching the goal, as Neil Kisika pointed out, 10th goal at home, 13 goals a season, just three of them on the road, and those all came in that one game against Montreal. If Columbus is going to make any noise in the playoffs, in all likelihood, they're going to have to do the majority of their work away from the friendly confines of the Tiny Demon Fortress. Do we think that Justin Meerum can have this sort of success? He hasn't demonstrated it, at least statistically, on the road this season. Do you think he'll be able to have this sort of impact for them if they're going to make a prolonged road march in the postseason?
Absolutely. I mean, sure. You know, he's I believe I touched on it last week. I feel like Meerum is his own biggest critic, and the fact that he needs to get up and go play, get some reason to have a chip on his shoulder to go play a game. And I think, you know, the fact is he may look at that stat and he may sit there and go, I haven't contributed as well as I should on the road. And that's going to get him up and get him pumped up for a game. And I think that that is going to push him to be better, to take this team to bigger heights, and to do great things. Because I can think of, you know, the 2008 comment he made. I think it was after I can't think of what game it was this summer that he said, you know, maybe after this game, people stopped talking about the 2008 team. Do you remember what one that might have been, Patrick? I'm not too sure.
I do remember him saying that. I don't remember which game off the top of my head.
But
it was very weird.
He seems very trying to pump himself up, and I think that's going to be the difference. And like you said with this, Bart, is, Ola Kamara is performing at a great clip, but he's sketchy at times with the easy finishes.
Has the yips.
Yeah, I didn't want to use it, but he's sketchy at time with the easy finishes, but then he's good for the weird wonder goal every once in a while. But you've got to get this consistency from him. And, the other thing too, guys, is Pedro Santos has yet to break through on the score sheet. I mean, can you imagine if the floodgates open on him, if he gets some confidence going on there? I mean, I think that's going to be doing some wonders for the franchise as well.
It's certainly Columbus not wanting for weapons. And that win, all the more important when you look at how things are shaping up now going into these final 2 weeks, at least for the Eastern Conference and that push for the postseason. That win, Columbus clinched the playoff postseason or playoff spot, as we mentioned, with their 50th point of the campaign. Still two games remaining. New York Red Bulls in sixth place above the line right now, and with just 31 games played. So games in hand on the other two teams. But you look at below New York, now Montreal, New England, Philadelphia, and Orlando City, all four of them with 39 points, just 4 points back of New York. Now, if New York were to win, and I believe they play on Wednesday, well, let's at least first look around at one of the odder developments for the weekend, the Dallas-Orlando game. And I don't know if Pat, were you on that, or Alex, was that you that caught that one online?
That was me. Yeah, that was really weird. So basically what happened was Dallas-Orlando played to a 0-0 draw, and Dallas changed out one of the players on their team sheet prior to kickoff.
Before the game.
Yeah, and played a player who was not supposed to be starting in place of a player who was supposed to be starting, which you're not allowed to do. When you submit that team sheet, that is your starting 11, and you cannot change that. You can sub a guy out in the first minute, but that's your locked-in lineup.
Well, you can change it, but then that guy can't play. The only times you normally see it is if – we were talking beforehand, like if a guy gets hurt in pregame warmups, you can then take him out because he's not eligible to play and he's hurt, so therefore he wouldn't be in the game anyway. But you can't, make a pregame switch substitution-wise once your opponent has seen your lineup, is basically the idea. But if it's an injury, obviously you're not playing him anyway, so it works out.
Yes. So.
But the. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, so basically, they ran into a situation where they made this change and didn't do anything about it. And so they didn't catch it, I guess, until after the game. But that's a violation of FIFA rules. And so Dallas may have to forfeit that game, which means that Orlando would pick up two extra points, which means that Orlando would inch closer to New York Red Bulls in the hunt for that final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference.
And three goals, which, given how close things are, goal differential could be a factor there.
Yeah, so it's possible that this will not be decided until maybe the final week, maybe even later than that, depending on how long, if they go to arbitration or something like that. I doubt that's going to happen, but how metro would that be if New York Red Bulls qualify for the MLS Cup playoffs? It's all good. They're in the sixth spot, and then a FIFA court comes down and says, "No, actually, we're adding 2 points to Orlando's season total," and then they get kicked back down to seven and get knocked out before the first round. That could be very fun. Something to watch.
That would be ridiculous, but it would be that would be wonderful. It'd be pretty
so big. MLS too.
Yeah.
I'm sure this stuff happens elsewhere, but
Man. How is that not an indictment of Pro? I mean, I understand that the coach, you can't take the player out, and for coaching staff in that sense, especially if it's going to end up costing them points, should be punished for that. But doesn't the head referee like take a look at some point? They've got like the little books and everything where they write everyone's names and numbers. Do they look to see what players are out on the field at the beginning of the game, or do they just like, oh no, heck, let's go with it? Or does he just see it there and it's like, oh well, I'm gonna ding you, and just keep it to himself?
I don't know. That's a good question. I would assume that they take a look at these things before the game and, make sure. But maybe, he didn't realize that the switch had been made, or, I don't know. I guess that's a question for them to look at as they explore what happened here.
Hernan Grana is going to find the narc.
Yeah, there you go.
You look at that. So New York, that, all that being said, New York could take care of business this weekend, and should, at least. They would clinch, in the case, I believe, of all the other teams, because they've got that game in hand on those four trailers: New England, Philadelphia, the aforementioned Orlando FC, and Montreal, the fourth team there, sitting on 39 points. But New England does have, but New York does have the game in hand, and they take on the Vancouver Whitecaps. One of the few bits of action going on this week for MLS. Most of the attention will be placed on the U.S. men's national team, at least here, and their fight to qualify for the World Cup in Russia coming into the weekend, I believe. In fourth place in the Hex, trying to get into one of the three spots there, and they will be taking on, who do we have Saturday?
Panama.
That's what I thought so. And that's Panama's third, I believe, in the Hex. Who's our, Alex, do you want to be our U.S. men's national team correspondent?
Do I want to be the
Who wants to be it?
I mean, talking about the U.S. men's national team right now is super depressing.
Yeah.
Because we're...
It is Panama Friday,
we're bad. So, we play Panama on Friday. If we lose, it's going to be real
Everything's
bad.
Everything's awful.
Yeah, if we lose, Twitter is going to absolutely melt down. Make sure, if you do not have a Twitter account by Friday, to make one so that you can yell, "The sky is falling," if we...
Yeah, set up a dummy one. Just go nuts.
Yeah, yeah. And just hang out in the
Don't get a Twitter account. Twitter is an awful dumpster fire of a website that should just be burned to the ground. But it's our dumpster fire.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's where we all congregate to complain about things. And complaining about the U.S. men's national team is as much a sport as soccer is. So come on, join us. And, we'll complain about everything. I personally still think this team is better than they were under Jurgen Klinsmann. I think that the results that we have gotten with the last result set aside have been okay. They've been pretty good. I mean, we got a point at Azteca. We lost to Costa Rica by less than we did under Klinsmann. I mean, there are like a lot of things. It's not as bad.
We've just That's gone the bar.
Being, yeah, we've gone from being terrible to being bad. And then you got 60 Minutes this weekend doing a piece on Christian Pulisic and tweeting out, Christian Pulisic has scored more goals at the age of 19 than Lionel Messi did at 19. Well, that's mostly because he was riding the bench in Barcelona.
Yeah.
But everybody knew he was going to be incredible. It's just everything is bad. Everything is bad. We're not going to make the World Cup, and everybody's going to blame Bruce Arena for it or something.
I'm okay with that.
Very good. So even if we make it, which I still think we will, although there's the doomsday scenario like I mentioned a second ago, I think we'll make it, but we're going to be terrible, and it's going to be a depressing World Cup. And it's going to be in Russia, which is also depressing.
That's just going to be
dangerous. Yeah, there's going to be like lots of racist, idiot fans and stuff like that. And looking forward to that. It's going to be absolutely terrible. Everything sucks. Back to you.
So I have serious questions, guys, about the roster. So let's go through it here real quick. Kellen Acosta, I understand. What has Juan Agudelo done to get an international call-up?
I don't know.
Anybody?
I don't know.
It's Bruce Arena, man.
Okay. Remember, Remember when everybody thought Juan Agudelo and Teal Bunbury were going to be the future strikers for the U.S. men's national team, like the starting
funny
guys?
Thing is,
like, oh,
so
Teal
far
Bunbury
they've
going to be so good.
So far they've been right about Juan Agudelo because he's still getting called in.
Yep.
Josie, I mean, okay. I'm done. Paul Arriola, I don't see the hype. I'm going to be completely honest. I don't get the hype.
He's really good
him.
At soccer, actually. I like him.
Marcus Beasley, he's old.
Still the best left back we've got.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. He's old, but that's all we have.
I want Greg Garza. Give me Greg Garza again.
Okay.
Let me see. Here.
Didn't he get hurt last weekend?
He's okay now, I think. I don't know. I have to go check my facts. Jeff Cameron. I mean, okay, Stoke City's not really having that great of a year, but I get it. Okay.
He's still playing against better than MLS.
Get that in. You know, but it's the goalies. Again, we hammer this every time there's an international call-up. Please bring somebody else in other than Nick Raimondo, Brad Guzan, and Tim Howard. Like, it's ridiculous.
It's funny that you say that because the reason we talk about it every time is because Bruce isn't going to do anything differently. He has no need to bring in a young goalie because he's not with the U.S. after the World Cup. So, you know, I actually talked to Greg about this the other day. And, you know, he said that he pointed out that the 2002 World Cup, do you guys know who the third string goalkeeper was?
Oh, shoot.
The answer, so we don't bore our listeners, is Tony Meola, who was in no form to be playing for the U.S. national team anymore instead of bringing in a young Tim Howard or someone like that. This is what Bruce Arena does. You know, he goes with the guys he trusts, and for the most part, it's worked out for him. Recently, it hasn't been great, but
Chris Wondolowski?
Yeah, exactly.
Can I just say, I think I said this last time we talked about the U.S. men's national team, but I just want to get it out again. Can we just get Landon Donovan to come out of retirement? Because we have no heart without Landon, and we're not going to have heart until Christian Pulisic is like 25 years old. So can we just play him until he's 45? I know he's got a kid. I know he's not match fit. I don't care. Ronaldo played for Brazil after he had had like 5 knee surgeries, and he was terrible. And granted, it was like a ceremonial final match or whatever. I don't care. That's Brazil. They're better than we are. We need you, Landon Donovan.
Did you guys hear?
Put the baby down and start doing laps, and we'll see you on Friday.
Or run with the baby. Get one of those man holsters and run with the baby.
That works. I'm okay with that.
Did you guys see Stern John played for his club team a couple weeks ago? I guess the team he's coaching.
Yes.
He told the players that they were, I'm going to clean it up a little bit, utter crap and have no right to be on the pitch. So he ripped his warm-ups off, put a uniform on, and went and played with his team, and they got whacked 6-0. But if he came out of retirement, I could see Landy Cakes easily coming out of retirement.
That's if not now that, because I didn't even realize that Stern John was player managing. So that is like the one acceptable route if Tony Aces were to sack Greg Berhalter right now. That is the one person that you could bring in right now. Just put him straight in to take over. Stern John, baby.
Man, that would be interesting.
Third division Jamaican soccer or whatever league.
I don't even know what I think about that. Anyway.
We're off the rails. Yeehaw.
This happens every time we talk about the United States.
Yeah, that's exactly. Because the men's team is off the rails.
They are.
Hey, we can talk about the women. They'll be in camp here in a week.
Are there rules against calling up women's players for the men's national
Seriously.
Team?
Yes.
Who would we call up?
Do we just enter the women's team to compete in lieu of the men's team?
Abby
it's
going to
be funny when they win like 4-0 on Friday and they're just.
I mean, it's Panama. They should.
Yeah.
Who would we call up theoretically in a weird world where we could call up women's national team players? Who would we call up?
I would know women's national team players.
I would 100. You? I would 110%.
Carly think. Lloyd.
Yeah.
Don Dwyer's wife.
You mean. Should they call up Mr. Sidney Leroux?
No.
Hey!
Sidney Leroux is a better soccer player.
Yeah, way better. He's Mr. Sidney Leroux, not the other way.
No, Dwyer sucks. I like him. He seems like a cool guy, but he sucks. I would take Abby Wambach out of retirement. Honest to God. She could still do a job. She's a much better target
forward. Does Mia Hamm still play soccer?
Sure.
Brandi Chastain, are they still playing?
Let's just get all the legends out of retirement and just throw the World Cup because nobody wants us to go to Russia anyway. So
I'll tell you.
Tony Miola again. What the heck? He's on Twitter.
I wonder what Tony's up to these days.
Eric Winalda, just have him tweeting. Play.
Tony tweets all day.
Brian Dunseth. Twelman. Yeah, but, you know, it's going to be an interesting ride for the United States. I mean, I hope they do well, but, you know, to kind of add to the chicanery that the segment's become, I don't really want to see those proposed 2018 Nike World Cup uniforms on the field, but, you know, that's just me, if those are true.
Did you see how they turned it sideways and made it a graph and then US World Cup chances, and it's like each bar like goes down a little bit, and then they put the months on it at the bottom. It's like August, September, October.
Oh my goodness.
Well done.
All right.
Well, if you do want to watch those games, that game on Friday night, you can watch it at a couple of our sponsors. There's a great place to watch U.S. men's national team games. I have actually taken them in at Land Grant, not a U.S. men's team game at Old North Arcade, but I bet it's a great place to watch. Again, Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street and landgrantbrewing.com and Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street and online at oldnortharcade.com. Hit them both up all the times. Guys, you know, we're not going to do because crew are going to be off until I believe the 15th, so some time off. We're still TBD for our next, if we'll be back next week or if it'll be the following one. But any parting shots to at least, or anything you just need to, burning that you need to get off your chest before we wrap this sucker up?
Tony Miola coached the Jacksonville Armada from November 24th, 2015 to August 7th, 2016, and is a current radio host on Sirius XM.
It's actually a really good show if anybody actually wants to listen to it. I believe, is it Grumpy Pundits?
I don't know. I don't pay for satellite radio.
You need to.
I
predict Columbus Crew SC continues the unbeaten streak against Bye Week FC by a score of 2-0.
Better, brother. I love you too, Tom Petty. That's like John. Yeah. Ralph, you need to put in some like Last Dance with Mary Jane or something to play us out when
you do
this.
I don't think he's dead yet at the time of recording. I don't think he's dead yet.
Tom Petty's awesome regardless.
Yeah, we're not sure. We're not sure what his condition is, but much love to Tom Petty and his family. Praying for a miracle. Love you, man. Love you, buddy.
Yep. We'll see you. And that'll do it for this week. Bye, buddies. I wish I all sit this